Hello, everyone. I'm Trent Luce. Welcome to another edition of Rural Routes, the program where we gather every day at this time. Well, Andrew Henderson, we do it Monday through Friday. Anyway, and what we do when we gather is continue to address the issues between rural and urban America. It is Tuesday. That means it's the Across the Pond version. Andrew Henderson actually did a little homework this week and brought a guest along. And all early indications are that it'll be like a day off for me just sitting here running the buttons.
Good morning, USA.
Oh, sorry. Good morning, USA. And welcome to Siobhan Fotheringham, a Scouser from Liverpool. Not near Manchester. She's not allowed to say that. From Liverpool. And she's from Liverpool and has an international packaging company that is going to take America by storm, because we are the answer to sustainable and less waste packaging in the UK. Over to you, Siobhan.
Wow, what an introduction. Don't know what to say now. Yes, we are hopefully the answer to sustainable packaging. But actually, I've spent a lot of time in food. So coming into packaging now, I can understand the challenges for sure with the plastic bait and everything else going on. So we are in America, NNZ Group, you know, we're there. We are taking America by storm for sure. We can see great business going on with our farmers across America and Canada. So a little bit of a shout out to our offices, NNZ offices over there. But if you want to know a little bit more about sustainable, I can tell you a little bit of my thought process of you know, where we're at.
Well, my first question is that one's automatically going to ask, because you and Andrew both emphasize moving into sustainable packaging. Does that mean that we were not sustainable up until 2020? And secondly, I don't know that the U.S. can handle another storm. So be careful, Siobhan.
Yeah, no. You know, what a fantastic question. I don't think for one minute we are not sustainable. And what a great opener for me, Trent. Thank you very much, because there lies the heart of the debate, really. So at the moment, what's going on in a lot of countries is everybody's gone anti-plastic, which you can understand when you see all the environmental pictures coming in from around the world of what's happening in the seas and so on. And really, what we see when we go through some of these challenges is everybody suddenly going, we don't want plastic, it's not the answer. Let's move away. But there's a lot of good. And not long ago, we were seeing it as a miracle. And it's actually how we treat our plastic that's more of a problem.
What do you mean by that, Siobhan? You mean it's how we use it after it's been used? Is that where you're coming from there?
Yeah, it's how we repurpose it, really. Because at the end of the day, and as Trent, you will well know, there is a big world to feed. And I've watched some of your, programs where you're talking about going to Japan. Absolutely fantastic country. One of the best I've been to by a long chalk, I have to say. But we do have a duty to feed the world. And I think in your program, you were talking about how we're not sort of getting the food produce out to other countries and different ways around it. But packaging forms quite a big part of sustainable food, and actually keeping the integrity and protecting food as it travels to whichever country in the world we send it to. And actually, it's not always the best option to move away from plastic, because you really, really have to think about what is used in the process of making plastic versus things like cardboard. And you're looking at things like CO2 usage, water, but also actually food wastage. How long is that food, that really, really precious food that we all produce and love, how long is that going to last for if it's not in the right packaging? So it's easy for everyone to say we don't want plastic anymore, but actually it's better to weigh up fact-based choices. And as a business, that's what NNZ are really trying to do at the moment. We're linking in with scientists and really trying to show people what the water usage would be versus the CO2. Used and just help people make a really good choice, and also what they can afford as well. As you know, there's not always lots of money in producing food and drinks, so it's also got to be something that the farmers can afford to use.
Cardboard itself, I just want to make sure that my knowledge is correct. That's a wood product, correct?
It is, yes.
100%.
So I think what you're looking at there is, well, cardboard, well, it can be depending on the sources and so on. You can use different pulp products and so on in the production of board, but it's quite heavy as well to move about. And there's a lot of water usage in making cardboard. So, you know, is that good for the environment? You know, who knows? So I think really when people are looking to make the choices on packaging, linking into a really, really good packaging network that can give them the facts, the science behind things, on the, you know, how quick the food would derogate, you know, what the emissions are, the CO2, the water usage and so on. It's so important, really. And then I think I was talking to you not long ago, Andrew, about I've been quite lucky in life. I've travelled to multiple countries selling food around the world, been on multiple trade missions as well, Trent, and they are fantastic ways to link up with other nations and really talk about food. And in one of my visits, I was across in India. And when I go to a country, I feel quite privileged. So I try to go and understand the food in that country and what people like to consume, but also understand the people behind who will be consuming your product. And as part of that, I went to the Indian slum in Mumbai called Dharavi slum, huge slum area. And I was actually quite worried about going in about how in my privileged sort of life it would feel going and seeing people in real, real poverty. Now, there's two sides to that tour. One side takes you very much through the industry side of the slum, which I think from memory was like a £6 million industry, you know, going on. And you go into these conditions and they're absolutely, you know, not what we would work in for one moment, but you see people picking through plastic. And what they do is they go through all the different plastic and then whatever they don't want gets put almost in a wheelbarrow, taken along to the local river and tipped into the river. Mm. And no matter what we do as an island in the UK or, you know, overseas, things like that definitely need to be looked at as well. Because when you mentioned, Andrew, is it more about the use after we've used it? Well, obviously things like that really come into it. And these people are in poor conditions just trying to make a living. And I think there's an education piece definitely needed on, okay, make your living out of recycling the plastic, but actually what gets done then with the rest of the plastic, please don't tip it in the river, you know.
So from your point of view then, Siobhan, you know, when we talk about what's in the sea nowadays, I know I've been lucky enough to travel like you. That's where we met. We met in Dubai.
We did.
And you were at the time working for a cereal company based in the UK, peddling oats at the time, a fantastic product, a cereal product. And obviously I was peddling milk, and oats and milk go with breakfast cereal. And
it's only fitting that you two would get along.
Absolutely.
There you go.
In a bowl.
I'm bringing that up is that are we saying then that there is a future for plastic, but we need to be able to make it go full circle, because it is ending up in our water courses, it is ending up in the sea, but because it may well be an efficient way of producing packaging to transport goods all over the world, we need to find a way to bring it back so it can be reused and reused and reused, a bit like water, so that we're not actually polluting the planet with it. Is that where you're coming from there, really?
Absolutely, definitely, there's more to be done. And I know big companies like ourselves, we're signing up to this circular economy at the moment. So we're trying to find ways that plastic can always be repurposed and then reused. It's not always possible in some products. So we do a lot of the big, what's called FIBCs, which is what you would put, say, your milk powder, maybe your oats, your grains and so on into. Them bags, they also get used for aggregates and glass. And when they go back to be recycled, you can't sort of use a recycled bag to then put food into, because you don't know what's in that mix.
Now, I'm going to say this. At this moment, I'm going to say this. You don't know this because he doesn't say it very often to people. But Trent is half German. Okay? Anyway, so and when I went to Germany, that's the thing they do better than anybody. And that is their way of making things go full circle. Their recycling is a joy, to be fair.
Yeah.
It's one of their biggest achievements. You go to a supermarket and every single bottle that you buy can be recycled. And what's better is that the people that bring the bottles back get paid for it. And
yeah.
They do it in such a way that I was actually going around when I was staying there in a place called Bad Liebenzell. I was a bad boy. because I was collecting other people's garbage to take it to the supermarket to get money.
You always find ways to make money, Andrew.
There's nothing bad about that, Andrew, but I have something I have to do, and that is looking at the clock, reminding you that the certified Piedmontese opportunity is in front of you as a cattleman. I don't know that we can. Well, it is recycling. It's upcycling protein. It's continuing that cycle of life via a rumen animal. And Lone Creek Cattle Company has mastered these Piedmontese genetics to be what we are calling, Andrew, Americanized. That means that they calve easy, they grow well, they perform extremely well, and you, the cattleman, get paid properly, closer to the consumer's food dollar. That's what it's all about, making sure the entire chain is rewarded for what they're producing in terms of a healthy packaged supply of food. Savon, never thought about the packaging. That's why it's such an interesting conversation. But in the meantime, before we get back to the next segment, LoneCreekCattleCo.com. Get a hold of Marlon Will. We'll take a break. We'll be back with more Rural Route on our Cross the Pond version after this.
Is it me that's blocked out there for about 20 seconds, or is it you, or who was it? Because I lost one of you for about 20 seconds. Everything okay?
I stayed.
I had nothing.
Okay.
There's a lot of cellulose packaging coming out now.
Whoa, whoa, whoa.
You're wasting good stuff. Siobhan, for goodness sake.
You were even warned.
I'm the bad girl.
That's on my list to talk about.
Whoa. Back in 3, 2, 1. Welcome back to Rural Route. Trent Lewis alongside Siobhan, who just got scolded.
Yes.
Andrew Henderson. Siobhan, you were told don't talk about stuff during the breaks. You don't waste good stuff. And there you go.
You know, but I like to repeat myself. I'd have done it again.
No, I don't like you to repeat yourself. Okay, so Rhonda brings up something that you two were both talking about that I want to chime in on. So we save bottles. We burn plastic. That's what we do at the house. I'm just telling you. Man, we save cans.
You're not allowed to do that in the UK. Just be careful.
You can't. What do you mean be careful? I don't need to be careful. You can burn it in the U.S. And I live in Nebraska. Okay.
I'm just going to make sure that when you come here, I'm going to keep you from the garden. Anyway, carry on.
So, but we collect as much of our waste, if you want to call it that, as possible. And each of our small towns has little bins where you can go put in your newspapers, put in your plastic, put in your cardboard, put in your whatever. And it has just become such a hassle. And you know why it's a hassle? It's cheaper to make new packaging than it is for them to recycle the old packaging.
In the short term.
Yeah. And I think that's a fair point. You know, it can be cheaper. But it depends what you want to leave for the future of your families. And I think really that's what we've focused on. So I can remember Trent years ago saying, oh, I haven't got time to wash the cans out of baked beans or what have you, because I'm a busy working mum, you know, working long, long days, certainly at senior manager level. But then I really had to think about, I've got children, what do I want to leave for them? And as everyone in the UK knows, we're suddenly having very hot summers, which we never had. It was always cold. And you've got to think, well, what is really going on? So I suppose over time we've evolved to say, yes, it is cheaper, but cheaper isn't always better. So
I can relate to that. I used to fish off a pier off an island in Scotland, and there was all these fish there. And I used to catch what we would call cod and haddock and saithe and various different types of fish. And I went there 3 years ago. The only one fish that's left because of the pollution in the sea is the starfish. There's no fish there anymore. Now, I know that's also because it's been overfished by fishermen as well. But one of the things you do notice in the sea there that you never saw before is human waste, packaging. Yeah. And no matter what, this isn't me on climate control at all. This is more me on why are we polluting our beautiful world with packaging. That we must find a way to stop that, because that is a legacy that nobody wants to leave their children and their children's children. And you were about to talk about it in the break and we stopped you. The cellulose, the answer is, guess what? The farmer.
The answer is the farmer. I'm seeing some fantastic innovation coming through now in different pulp and different materials, and cellulose nets for our onions and produce like that is certainly becoming more and more popular. And I think on one of your shows, Trent, you were talking about, you know, the cellulose opportunities in America, and I just think, really, if people join up more, where can we go? Can we find solutions that gives the right balance?
Helping to put a new milk plant in Scotland, and Siobhan and I were having a chat about this last week because Siobhan may well be able to solve a problem for us. We've heard that there's a plastic equivalent that can be made out of corn, Trent.
We've been doing that.
And it can be used as a milk bottle.
Yeah, from an ethanol plant.
From an ethanol plant. I don't care where it comes from, but if it works.
Well, because we turn corn into gasoline, and that's the base of all of what we're talking about with plastics anyway. It's a petroleum product, but you can do the same exact thing with corn.
Yeah.
But this is totally degradable. I'm led to believe this is totally degradable.
To be true. Corn is biodegradable.
Yeah, so what I'm saying is if it ends up in the sea, then there you are. We've started to make a really positive step forward. But I'm yet to know, you say all that, Trent, but I've yet to see any milk in any of these bottles or any products in any of these bottles that I've seen. And yet that's where we should be looking because not only does it give the farmer potentially more income for some of the waste that they would have in the fields, it also... it can strengthen the future viability of the planet as well. So,
Brian Mose has your answer. Corn and soybean plastic has been possible, but not yet cost effective.
Well, let's make it cost effective, Brian.
Yeah, I think there lies the challenge. You know, with everything as a packaging supplier, we suddenly get told we want all these options, but obviously the cost, as you know, in farming, mm-hmm. it's so tight. It just makes it difficult.
Can I reply to Brian on that? Because it's quite interesting. The packaging might be more expensive here, Brian, but I happen to know that it's much cheaper to put a bottling plant into a factory than a Tetra Pak filler. It's a quarter of the cost. So, and that's in large-scale manufacturing. So there might be, we need to, as you say, Siobhan, we need to look at all the costs here to see whether this stacks up. And also the idea of, as I said before, of some form of recycling program. I agree with Trent on this. You know, when you've got all these different type of bins, I happen to know here in Crewe and Nantwich, where our waste goes, that they make everybody divide everything up. And then when it gets to the waste disposal site, it's all chucked in the same bin again.
Yeah, yeah. I've seen them do that.
But I think that the retailers have an opportunity here to help with this and to make, and this is the thing they like, is to maintain their customer base by offering that service. And interestingly, and it worries me because as I said before, it's Trent has some heritage from this part of the world, that Aldi and Lidl are very successful in the UK. I don't know if they're very successful in the US yet, but they're a successful hard discounter in the UK. They purport to be very British. That's their big push. They aren't, in fact, very British, but that's their big push. And what's interesting is that in Germany, Denmark, Belgium, France, they've now become the kings of recycling. And I'm expecting them to do that here, actually. And when they do, that could be dangerous.
But what's the cost, Andrew?
Well, they make a lot of money out of it at Trent, to be fair, because it's bringing more and more customers to their stores. They found it as a mechanism to bring customers to their stores.
I keep banging that home because Lisa has brought to our attention that she had the same. They make it not convenient to do it, and I know it's because it just costs so much money. And by the way, you were talking about the plastics. I can't speak to that because I'm not a water guy. So I'm not. I read articles that say that there's a serious plastic problem in our global waterways. I don't know that to be the case.
And there is, Trent.
You're telling me you saw it, but you also tell me that it's illegal to burn plastics. Maybe if they burned the plastics, you wouldn't end up in the water.
Well, that's true too, but unfortunately, most
it's
of
the chemicals released. So when you burn plastic, there's different chemicals released into the atmosphere, and that can also damage the environment as well. So this is what I'm saying: is it's such a fine balance. We do a thing called Rethink Your Packaging. It can be seen online, hashtag Rethink Your Packaging. And we try and bring all these things into balance because at the end of the day, you can offset one thing against something else. So it's about having a balance to make it easy for people. Look after the food, look after the shelf life. Packaging is quite complex. I've realised coming out of food, which is complex enough, looking at oat cycles and the best time to grow and all the different things. And actually, in the past, I've done a lot with tuna fish and pineapples and talking about El Nino and all these different things. But actually, packaging is quite complex, but we're trying to help people get it right. And that's what NNZ do well. But there is no easy answer. And there's so many things at play, whether it be convenience or what's the best way to handle it. And I think the main thing is there's a lack of knowledge and understanding, and people are just confused.
I agree with Siobhan, and I think that, and I think Trent is on the same page with this, is that we need to sort of simplify this and get some really good communication going so that we actually understand what we are doing and what methodology is going to be the best from an efficiency point of view, but also from a sustainability point of view. And when I say sustainable, I mean that it's right for the consumer and right for the environment. The two things need to be working together. That's the issue here.
So David Chaddick chimes in and says that it's also illegal to burn plastics in California. Why is it that all of the countries, I'm calling California a country, that are closest to the water make it illegal to burn plastics, and then they end up in the water? Little cowboy arithmetic here, folks. It's easy to fix. And Siobhan, I heard your statement about the chemicals, but you can't tell me it's any different than running a car down the road. It's the same chemical that's emitted. Yeah. I can't let you answer that, but you can pick it up when we come back with the second half. Packaging of food. I think this is a great topic. Thank you, Andrew. You did really well. Speaking of doing well,
three times.
Neogen is doing well at looking at the genomics of the animals that you want to produce, possibly the oat plant too. I don't know about that, but Neogen focuses on animals, food animals, or your pet. You want to know more about what your bull has in terms of a genomic potential to pass on to the offspring? You can get an identity test. It's very cost effective. We do it on all of our boars. That's how I know that Loose Beaver Moon excels in every trait, including meat quality, growth, efficiency, all of those climate neutral traits that we want to focus on. More details about looking at your genetic future at neogen.com. First half of Rural Route complete. We'll be back with more after this. Welcome back to Rural Route. Trent Luce alongside Siobhan. Fotheringham.
Yeah. Apparently, okay. It's a Scottish name. It's too posh, I think.
Scottish royalty.
I'm not going to argue there.
Yeah.
By the way, if any of the listeners wanted to know what John Lennon's mum might have sounded like, that's the accent you're listening to now. just for the few of you that remember the Beatles, unlike Trent.
I'm just hoping everyone can understand, because we have a different form of English called Scouse in Liverpool, and people generally have to really concentrate.
No, you're doing a great job. Don't worry. But so, what we should do is have a question out there to anybody that's listening and say, who can tell me what Scouse is while we're on here? They'll all Google it, no doubt. But it'll be interesting.
Just think of the Beatles. The Beatles were all Scouse.
You can't say that with Trent. He doesn't know who they are.
Well, I do now, because Andy's giving me this tutorial about John Lennon and some guy named Peter or something. I don't know.
Paul McCartney.
There you go. Yeah, that animal rights activist that I have no time for.
He's been, you know, the guy in the hole in the Monty Python film that was there for a hundred, the guy that just sat in a hole, Jehovah, that's him. That's Trent.
Anyway, do you know what? Sometimes that's a good place to be, though, Trent, yeah. Isn't it?
I love it. Yeah. It's a great place to be. You can come visit anytime. It's just like living in bliss. Yeah. Brian actually brings up another good point. All the good points that are coming from Brian. Plant-based plastics cannot be recycled because there are concerns about the GMO components in the plant before it's made into a plastic container.
Well, I've got to say that sounds a little political there, Brian.
But I don't doubt that he's telling the truth.
No, he's saying it might not be, because if it's made from a plant, you would have thought it would be recyclable. I think he's trying to...
Or biodegradable.
Biodegradable. But I think he's trying to say that perhaps the genetically modified seed may have a detrimental effect to human survival.
That's not what he's saying.
I'm not sure.
That's not what he's saying. No, that's not what he said.
What's he saying?
What he said was the perception that the package came from a GMO plant could lead to consumer pushback. Right. He did not say that it was a problem.
I think at the end of the day, there's lots of different options, and you know, you're right, really, that there's still education needs to be done about different products and how to use them in packaging. But at the end of the day, I'm still a big fan of traditional packaging worked really, really well if it's handled in the right way afterwards. You know, if there's ways that you can repurpose, reuse, then, you know, great, continue with the traditional packaging as much as we can, with a sensitivity to the environment. But still, you know, at the end of the day, plastic is a vital resource to reducing food waste and food.
It looks like Albert Einstein has joined us in the name of Philip Branton, because he's actually got the solution. He's saying that these plastics can be used in nanotechnology for 3D printing and manufacturing. So happy days.
Absolutely.
So what we've got to try and do is tap into Philip and make sure that we move the packaging that way once it's been used.
To repurposing the plastic with modern solutions.
Is that the answer?
Is that where we're going? Because you're in the business.
I don't know if that's the answer. Again, there's so much more research needs done, but it sounds like a good option. You know, it sounds like something that I'm sure some top scientists will certainly be looking at. So
he certainly seems to know his nanotechnology because he knows the word. So that's, you know, at the end of the day, it looks like a good idea.
See, Philip, I would have just said nano, not being able to spell nanotechnology. So, yeah, you're a step ahead of me. But I want Siobhan to give us her crystal ball, so to speak. Ooh. Because, Siobhan, I got to be honest. I have talked about trade. I've talked about how we need to continue to export food and products around the world. I gave not a nano's worth of minutes to the packaging that is included to get it to where it needs to be. So now you have brought in this front and center and hitting my awareness in how important the package is.
Yeah,
absolutely. You know, at the end of the day, Trent, when you go out and you rear your cattle, your pigs, ready for food produce, you put a lot of love and effort in that. And if you want to send your produce to Japan or anywhere else in the world with pride, mm-hmm. to say, you know what, we can give you a really good food safe product, you have to think about how it can get there with the right integrity, safely. And that's where packaging does come in.
And how it looks.
People buy with their eyes. We all know that, you know, it's such an important thing. So, you know, it is as important as the food really is what it goes into and how it gets to market and how it gets to market safely. And I think really for the packaging industry at the moment, it's a real, real challenge for us. Because we're being held out to say, oh, too much plastic is being used. But actually, we've also got that balance of having to find ways to keep the food fresh, safe, get it to market right, and still satisfy what consumers want to see, which is great-looking packaging.
It's also, forgive me for saying this, because it sounds very capitalist, if that's the right word. It's also very important in the future of generating profit and income that the packaging appeals to the consumer and also delivers what it's there for, which is whether it's food or drink or whatever, it delivers the product in the right way to the consumer. So packaging is actually, you could argue if everything came in a box with no information on, that packaging isn't important, but it might, in my mind, be the most important part of a product.
Yeah, but for food safety, certainly. I mean, if you think of the incident at Pret-a-Manger a few years ago where the packaging wasn't labelled with the ingredients and then we had the poor lady with an allergy, you know, that
Can I explain that, Siobhan? Because I don't think they'll know about that.
No, I don't.
Okay. So there is a
Pret-a-Manger is your attempt to hoodwink the British consumer by having a McDonald's with high-value food. Did you know that?
I have never done anything to attempt to hoodwink anybody about McDonald's.
No, I'm not. I'm just telling you they came out with a new, very clever. It looked like it was, you know, the Ritz-Carlton fast food center.
It's a bit of a posh Subway. It's a sandwich chain.
High quality food. Pardon?
Yeah.
Is it me?
High quality sandwiches.
High quality sandwiches. But what happened was they didn't label a sandwich properly. And somebody consumed a sandwich who had a nut allergy and died. I'm on the right subject, aren't I?
That's it, yeah, absolutely.
And they were sued massively by the courts through the parents. And mm-hmm. that became a, what they call a test case in the UK. So now every time that you buy a sandwich, it has to have virtually every ingredient in there. And any allergy warnings have to be on that packaging, because it actually said that there was no, it actually said on the packaging that, that people with no allergies could consume that product.
Yeah.
Right,
I think in this case, there was two differences. So if you were buying a prepackaged sandwich, it would be labeled. But if they were making the sandwich more or less fresh in the store that day and putting it in the sandwich bags ready to go, in the past, the law said it didn't have to be labeled. And of course, when the girl said, has this got nuts in, she was told no, and off she went. But unfortunately, it did. So now there's a requirement to actually have great looking packaging, but always put the right label on. But it's such a wide subject. But you think of any big brand, it's all about the packaging. The brand is what sells. The brand is what premiumizes that food product. So it is quite, you know, a wide and important area to food. But it's also an area where, you know, if you think, and I'm sure you'll both identify with this, how much you can charge for your milk or your meat. You know, you want to spend as little as you can on the packaging, but actually still have a great looking product. And that's why it becomes really difficult to find solutions.
Well, I could argue that you might spend more on your packaging, because if you look at the example of Coca-Cola, for example, I would hazard a guess that the packaging is probably more valuable than the contents.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I'm looking at Rhonda saying it's hard to move milk without a bucket. And David Chaddock, and this is one of Trent's old ones, this, Trent uses this probably once a week when he goes back 100 years and said, well, we used to do that 100 years ago, and here we are doing it again.
And the world is cyclical.
So things are cyclical, but I think, carry on, Trent.
Well, I think that the Coca-Cola example is a really good one. I have a friend who's been in the dog food business, and I believe this is changing, and I know that it's changing because I have another friend who told me it was changing this week. It used to be that in the pet food world, which is a massive and very competitive business, the bag was worth more than the components in the bag. And now we've shifted over to more meat-based items, and that's changing a little bit at a time. But the packaging is hugely important. But what I appreciate about Siobhan so much is that no matter where our conversation goes, Andrew, she always brings it back to what kind of a package can we make to keep this food safe?
Yeah.
Obviously, that's top of mind for you.
Yeah. Well, that's good to know that your supplier's thinking that way, isn't it? That's why, I'm not just saying this because Siobhan's a friend, but coming from the food industry as she has into managing director of a packaging company is probably a good route to go, because you'll know how important keeping the food fresh and safe is in terms of the bad news. Unfortunately, travels an awful lot quicker than good news when it comes to packaging.
Absolutely. But I think it's also having worked with the manufacturer, growers, we're proud of our food. You know how much heart and soul goes into producing every single packet of product for people. And the last thing you want to do is give them something that makes them, you know, unwell, or they taste that product and don't want to come back and buy again because it just doesn't taste right. And certainly, I mean, growing oats in a field or whether you're rearing cattle, there's a lot of hard work and love goes into that. So that last part, you don't want to be let down. You know, you want partners, packaging partners, that will really, really work with you to make sure that you deliver that product really well to your customers. It's not cheap, is it, to rear cattle at the end of the day, Trent? There's a lot of love and time and effort goes into, you know, producing meat products.
We call it blood, sweat and tears.
Brian Moe's is absolutely correct, and it surprised me actually that we've got people here coming to the defense.
surprises him, Brian, that you're correct.
No, but it surprises me that somebody would jump so towards protecting and saying how good plastic has been on the whole for food safety and for the movement of food across the world. Do you know what? Maybe that's it. You know, Trent has just said, he's admitted it, that I think it's probably this year the first time somebody's come on and talked to him about packaging.
This day.
And maybe we should be doing
year,
that more often.
This day.
Well, I'm happy to talk
whoa,
more
whoa,
often.
Whoa. I have to say it is time for our last break. Who would have ever guessed that a packaging conversation could be so riveting, but it is. The Stand at Paxson County is also riveting. That's a movie that illustrates the challenges in animal ownership. I suggest you go to Netflix, Savon, if you've not done this, and watch The Stand at Paxson County. It's going to be on for a little bit, but it only takes an hour and 40 minutes, and it brings to light the other side, which has never been shared before, thanks to Forest Films. We'll be back with the last segment of Rural Route and packaging of food right after this.
You will know after you've watched the film.
Welcome back to Rural Route. Andrew's still going on about The Stand at Paxson County. You'll find this humorous. We had our homecoming football game Friday night at our high school. And our Lindsay, by the way, was crowned homecoming queen, Savon. Oh. That was nice.
It's good job. She looks like a mother then, isn't it?
It is a good thing. Yes.
Yeah.
And the king, I just realized this morning because I posted a picture of Lindsay as the queen and Clayton Detlefs as the king yesterday. And
it's like a prom thing.
Yes, it is. Homecoming king and queen. But interesting to note, they are also ranked number one and number two in their class academically.
Fantastic.
Yeah, how about that? So I actually had a place I wanted to go, and Andrew got me all messed up somehow talking about homecoming. So after the homecoming game, the football game, we went to a local pub with some friends we don't get to see often enough, even though our kids are in school together. Cindy Ference, I sat down by her and her husband, Bill, and Cindy looked at me and Andrew, she said, almost like as if she read your play script, she looked at me and she said, "So Trent, do you have any hay for me today?"
Yeah, do you know what? For the rest of your life.
Yeah, I know.
Around, isn't it?
Be careful what you do in a movie. That's the moral of the story. So back to packaging. Where were we, Simone? Yeah, because I think you're floating in and out of a good cell signals. What I think the issue is, Andrew.
Okay.
Yeah, so we've talked lots about packaging, haven't we? I think we could talk forever, Trent, but it'd be nice to know a little bit more about what people are doing. And, you know, I thought I'd come on and tell you all about my hot air ballooning trips and trips around the world and things like that. So, do you know, Trent, it was quite funny, actually, when I told you I was in India. And I went into the slum and we seen all the industrial side. I then went into the side where everybody lived. And the strange thing was there was these tiny little houses with 60-inch TVs on the wall, believe it or not, in the slum. And there was lots and lots of fresh butchers and little stores. And it was real, real community. And I thought I would go through that slum and actually be really, really, you know, downheartened about how the other half live. And what I did notice is a real community, fresh food, fresh produce, local produce, and really, really happy children with no mobile phones. They were all just playing cricket in the street and football and you name it. So, you know, I've been around the world. I can talk about packaging. I can talk about different things. But it might be nice for you listeners to hear about some different stories. And one in particular, which I think you'll find is quite funny, is after my slum tour, I decided I went over to New Delhi. And, of course, when you're in New Delhi, you decide, well, I've got to go out to Agra. I've got to see the Taj Mahal. And I got on the Gatiman Express and I went across, seeing all the Taj. And on the way back, Trent, I'm sat on the platform with billions of people. I mean, Indian railway stations are madness. And down the platform comes what I thought was a cow. And the cow is very sacred in India.
Right.
And it's wandering along. And I thought, I'll give it a nice pat as it goes past. And as it got close, I realized it had two big horns and I literally just went to give it a pat on the back when it went charging off. And I realized I think that might have been a bull. Unless you do have cows with horns, I don't know.
We do have cows with horns.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, maybe it was a cow, but on a railway station on the platform walking along.
Well, it's somebody's uncle, so it's permitted to walk with a proper pass. India has 170 million cows. And by the way, I'm told now they eat more of them than they used to.
I would imagine so. There's so much, just everywhere you go, lots of cows in the street. But on this busy platform, you couldn't script it. You know, there's this cow wandering along quite happily. monkeys running about, fantastic, you know.
I experienced something very similar in Cambodia, where the cows were all tied up with ropes on the side of the road, and with a little bit of verge to each family had one cow. But you know, as to bring this back to, you know, about the consumer and people's way of life, on our social media at the moment, there's a video that's appeared that I don't know whether you've seen it, Siobhan, of life in colour in 1908.
So right.
Yeah, and it's got all the sounds in it as well. And what you just described without the 60-inch TV was life in the United Kingdom in, you know, 1908, where there was huge populations in very industrial towns, with, you know, very large families, religion. In those days, if you were in certain religions, you had 12, 13 children, because there was a mortality rate that we don't have anymore. So people tended to have a lot more children. And when I did my family tree, I went back and saw that one side of the family was quite prolific and the other side wasn't as prolific. And you see that really, we're actually looking at evolution here. And when you go to Thailand and you go to Cambodia and parts of India, what we must understand is that those economies are about to expand and explore the world the way we have in the free world, maybe 50, 60 years down the line, in a very similar way, with a few different changes, but they are still evolving because their economies have moved that way. And that's why a lot of them produce and manufacture the goods that we all enjoy now. So what I'm saying is that the packaging and the way that we come together with those people in trade is going to be crucial. It's going to be absolutely crucial.
Absolutely. You're going to get me on my soapbox now about international trade, but I think you said it in your video for Japan that the actual tariffs and duties are phenomenal in some countries. I think it was 50% for your products into Japan. And it's absolute madness, because what you actually see is a world, and again, I've traveled to a lot of countries looking at food, it's a real divide of what people can or can't afford. And a lot of it comes down to us not having the right trade deals or high duties. And it's an absolute travesty. People can't afford food. There's food poverty or the starving in the world. And actually, a lot of it comes down to these tariffs being reduced. And, you know, that would help everybody. It would help the farmers.
Protectionism is a terrible thing. It's a Western disease. And not least practiced by the European Union.
Yeah, and I think Trent said it with Japan. If you've got a country where you need to protect your farmers, I can understand there being a duty, because really we should try and support local where we can. But I think in Japan or countries that don't produce and are so in need of being able to, you know, import really, really good quality products, it's important, you know, whether that be packaging we're looking at as being a cost element, or whether it be the tariff, it's important that, you know, trade does listen and we do get these deals, because there's a big world to feed out there. There is a
I've read that already we've signed trade deals moving forward with nearly 50 countries since for the 1st of January 2021. So there is some great work being done. So let's hope we get one with the U.S. So.
Savannah brings up something that I want to just take to the next step, because she referenced what I was speaking of in Japan in 2017. And we had a trade deal with Japan. And part of that trade deal was that we had a tariff. I believe it was at 24%. Unless we hit a certain threshold for a given year. And if we send more than that amount of beef into Japan, then that tariff went from 24% to 52%. And that year was our best year ever for beef exports to Japan. And so we went to that threshold of 52%, which is huge. It's unbearable. But I bring that up because right now we have a president in the United States, as you do, Andrew, you have elected officials who are aggressively pursuing better trade deals. It's not that you get a trade deal, and this is where we went awry with the TPP. There was a trade deal on the table, but it wasn't a good one. And when you write a trade deal, it needs to be a good one. And when you have one that has a threshold that your tariff is going to double if you send X amount into a country, you need a better deal. And that's really what the new Japan deal was all about. So we have a new one in place now that we did not have at that time, but that illustrates the point on how important these all are. Siobhan, we're down to 2 minutes. I want to make sure that you get everything out that you wanted to talk about in terms of where we're at with packaging, where we need to be, or what's just top of mind for you.
I just think we need to educate better. I think we need to focus on fact-based choices with packaging. Have a look on the NNZ website for anyone that's not sure on our Rethink Your Packaging. There's a video on YouTube, hashtag Rethink Your Packaging, and just sort of start to make yourself more aware of what we can do personally, and then let the industry experts such as NNZ really help and find the right solutions. Because as I say, food integrity, it's got to stay at the top of the agenda.
Yeah, I'm really intrigued by the you went to, I don't remember now the country that where they had the fresh food, India.
India.
And you saw everything fresh and everybody was happy and the kids are playing games, not on their mobile phones. Really, there's just a factor of affluence in all of that. And here we are in the United States, in California, in the UK, talking about plastic being bad. They don't use as much plastic in India. They're happier, and they don't waste as much. Go figure. When things come so easy, you take it for granted. That's the moral of the story.
Absolutely. And they don't, but we've shipped a lot of waste. Different countries have shipped a lot to India, and unfortunately, they're just trying to deal with it as best they can to make a living.
Andrew?
Well, I'm just going to say, yesterday was the first time in, I believe, 29 years that we exported British beef to the United States of America.
Wow. Wow.
Thank you. Thank you, friends in the United States of America. Let's hope that's the beginning of a fantastic trading relationship.
Yeah, I'll just remind you that we are short on minced meat, so we appreciate your ground beef contribution.
Okay.
I just hope you package it correctly so it doesn't spoil before it gets here.
We're short of hay this year as well, by the way.
We have journeyed down the road connecting rural and urban America. Siobhan, it has been a great pleasure. Andrew, it's always fun. Trent, we all three remind you that all roads do lead to a rural route. For quite some time now, I've been sharing with you the advantages of looking at the genomics of these cattle, these animals, but take it from somebody who's been using Neogen and the Igenity test for more than 10 years. You really start to reap the rewards of evaluating the genomics. Mike Healy, Warland, Wyoming.
There's a good payback. I changed Igenity's formulation on how it emphasized stability so that it emphasized marbling. And we've been able to raise our marbling percentage for, we started out, we were around the 77-78% choice. So now this last group we finished, last year's 2019 steer calves, finished at 92% marbling, where we had 11% prime. Premium choice had 53%. So we had 64% of the calves recognizing a pretty substantial premium.
Full details about your future premiums at Neogen.com, shining a light on your genetic future.